and welcome to the Law Matters program for another fortnight. Great to have your company. Jodie Hoffman with you in the studio this hour. This program is brought to you by the Aboriginal Legal Service of Western Australia, been on air since 2010. Wherever you're listening from, thanks for joining us. To our listeners listening in through the National Indigenous Radio Service, also through Wurundjeri Media in Kununurra in Western Australia, and 6DBY in Derby. I think Chuma Polka in Kalgoorlie join us as well, so big shout out to all the mob around Cal as well. A big program coming your way. We're going to head to a little town in northern New South Wales, pretty close to the Queensland border, a town called Inverell. Now, it lies on the traditional lands of the Kamilaroi Nation, and it's made news for all the wrong reasons, because in March last year, several First Nations families, including children, parents, carers and elders, were ordered to leave the Inverell Aquatic Centre by the New South Wales Police. As a result, a complaint has been lodged with the Australian Human Rights Commission stating that the actions of the pool staff and the police breached the Racial Discrimination Act. I'll be speaking with Lucy Schroeder from the National Justice Project. She's a solicitor representing the family. So do stay tuned for that. Very interesting family, but very interesting story. And the first thing that comes to mind is the Freedom Rides from 50 years ago. Anyway, we'll touch on that as well. Also coming up this program, Sophie Stewart joins us. Sophie is the CEO of Social Reinvestment Western Australia. The Australian Senate is currently undertaking a national inquiry into Australia's youth justice and incarceration system. The committee received over 200 submissions, including one from the Aboriginal Legal Service, but also from Social Reinvestment WA, and both organisations gave evidence in Perth recently. Sophie will be having a yarn from us. She's in Melbourne today, so we'll head over to NAM for that. Also speaking very shortly with Dr. Jacqueline McGowan-Jones, who is the WA Commissioner for Children and Young People, a role she's held since January 2022. And we will be talking about a new report about our young people. So do stay tuned for that. This is Law Matters. Let's kick it off with this one from Yotha Yindi and the Treaty Project, a song called Mabo. Thank you. Yothu Yindi and the Treaty Project and Mabo, kicking off Law Matters for another fortnight. Thank you for your company wherever you're listening in around the country, and we welcome to the program Dr. Jacqueline McGowan-Jones, who is the WA Commissioner for Children and Young People in Western Australia, but speaking to us this morning from Gadigal. Commissioner, welcome to the program. Thank you for your time. How are you?
I'm well, Jodie, and thanks for having me.
Always good. We've had you on the program before, and very keen to talk to you because at the top of the agenda lately has been our young children and our young people. And there's a new report out about the profile of children and young people in Western Australia. Some very important key areas of concern. Could you give us a brief overview of the report?
Sure. Yeah. There's major areas of concern for children and young people, and predominantly that's about the lack of services supporting families early. So we say early childhood development is not on track for Aboriginal children in particular in WA, but across the board, WA has gone backwards. And that means our kids are starting school without the social and emotional and sometimes physical development they need to be able to learn and engage and socialise. We know overweight the problem, but, you know, mental health issues are another key issue.
Look, you know, I don't think it's very easy being a young person today, and I know that our key area of work with the Aboriginal Legal Service is obviously youth detention, and enough horror stories have come out of this state in relation to the treatment and conditions of our young people as young as 10 years old being held in Banksia Hill Detention Centre and also Unit 18 of the maximum security prison over here. What do we know about the youth detention rates?
Well, what we know is that youth detention rates have decreased. But what the big concern is for all of us is that the recidivism rate has gone up. So more than 55% of young, it's around 58% actually, of children and young people who are put into detention return to detention. That shows us the system is failing. That shows us that we're focused on locking kids up. We're not focused on understanding their needs, getting them into specialist services, supporting them. The other problem we've got is the age of criminal responsibility, you know, 10 years of age. Who believes a 10-year-old should be in a detention centre? Absolutely nobody.
It's crazy. It's really alarming, isn't it, when you think about a child, you know, their brain is still developing, 10 years old, and they can be behind bars. You're probably aware of a program that's run through the Aboriginal Legal Service. It's called Old Ways, New Ways. And what it is it's working with our young people and their families and their community and providing this wraparound service that's actually keeping young people out of the detention system, which costs about $1 million a year per person. So there's got to be other ways of looking at that area, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely. What we're focusing on here is the behaviour rather than, which is a symptom, which is the cause of why they're offending. And we have to be supporting families early. Now, the government has just announced the new On Track to Thrive program to be trialled in Geraldton and Armidale. But we need this sort of approach across the state. Mm. We need to be saying, you know, our most important resource is our kids. It is not what we dig out of the ground in the Pilbara or the goldfields.
Of course.
You know, those resources should be helping us to protect our most precious resource, which is our kids.
Obviously, punitive approaches are ineffective. What's your suggestions moving forward? And I'll just let our listeners know that the line is not too clear at the moment where we're speaking with Dr. Jacqueline McGowan-Jones. She's in an airport at the moment, so bear with us. We can still understand what you're saying, though. It's just not a crystal clear line. But punitive approaches we need to do away with. Where do we go moving forward?
Look, the thing that we need to do is that the minute something's going wrong with a family, so that might be that Bob hasn't had a health check, it might be that Mum's not turning up at other appointments, did not know that the police have been called out for FDV. The minute those things happen, we should be doing wraparound supports and saying, okay, what do you need as a family to support you, to support your kids? We shouldn't be taking kids into out-of-home care because there's family and domestic violence. That's just really traumatising them. We should not be putting kids into out-of-home care who then end up in detention at 10 years of age. They're in the care of the state. We also should not be waiting until it's a crisis and a child is out at night on the streets at 10 years of age or 14 years of age or 16 years of age involved in crime. When a child starts running amok in school, we suspend them. Often they never go back.
Mm.
Let's talk about how we engage the family to see what they need to support their kids.
Yeah. It's so true. Their profile of children and young people in Western Australia report for this year is on the website of the WA Children's Commissioner. Covers a whole range of areas about our young people, population, families, learning, participating, healthy and connected, safe and supported, areas of concern such as early childhood development, unhealthy weight, mental health issues, safe and secure, and of course, youth detention rates. I'd like to get you back in the studio when you're back over this side of the world and we can sit down and maybe go in more depth to some of these issues that are really prominent and important to speak about for our young people. But thank you for your time on the program. We do appreciate it and we look forward to another chat very soon.
Thanks, Jodie, and love to come in and sit with you face-to-face. It's much more fun.
Dr. Jacqueline McGowan-Jones, WA Commissioner for Children and Young People. I would encourage stakeholders and anyone working with young people in our community to check out that report, The Profile of Children and Young People in Western Australia. This is Law Matters. Let's have a listen to Bujura and a song called Get Down.
Too late. It's too late to get down. It's too late.
Now it's Bujara, get down here on the Law Matters program brought to you by the Aboriginal Legal Service of Western Australia. If you were in Boorloo on the 26th of January, were you at Forest Place when there was the act of terror at our Survival Day event? If you were, and if you weren't, I'm sure this activity will interest you greatly. Following the act of terror on Invasion Day in Boorloo, Perth, on the 26th of January this year, there is going to be a community healing and family event. It's on Sunday the 29th of March from 11 a.m. until 2 p.m. It's a free family event. It's going to be a swag of speakers, activities, fun for the kids, heaps to do. So I would encourage you to head along to Forest Place Sunday the 29th of March from 11 till 2 as we reclaim the space after that act of terror on Invasion Day. We're going to have a listen to a song from Blackfire called Wanna Go Back. When we return, we'll be having a yarn with Sophie Stewart, CEO of Social Reinvestment WA. Yeah, that's Blackfire and Wanna Go Back here on the Law Matters program brought to you by the Aboriginal Legal Service of Western Australia. Jodie Hoffman with you this hour. Thank you for your company. Still to come on the program, we're going to speak with Lucy Schroeder, a solicitor with the National Justice Project. We're going to delve into a little town in northern New South Wales called Inverell. It's pretty close to the Queensland border, lies on the traditional lands of the Kamilaroi Nation. About 12,000 people live there. 1,500 of those are First Nations peoples, and we're going to find out about an event that happened last year that saw several First Nations families, including kids, parents, carers and elders, who were ordered to leave the local aquatic centre by New South Wales police. As a result, there has been a complaint lodged with the Australian Human Rights Commission stating that the actions of the pool staff and the police breached the Racial Discrimination Act. So looking forward to speaking with Lucy very shortly on the program. But first, we're heading to Naarm, Melbourne, where Sophie Stewart, CEO of Social Reinvestment WA, is on the line. Sophie, thank you for your time. How are you?
Oh, thank you so much for having me, Jodie. I'm good. Yeah, it's very cold over here and wet, though, so I'm missing home.
Oh, yeah, it's a bit windy here today, but pretty nice. Cannot complain. Hey, it's interesting because we've had two WA guests and you're both on the other side of the country, because we just spoke to Dr. Jacqueline McGowan-Jones, the WA Commissioner for Children and Young People. She was in Gadigal. You're in Naarm. So a bit of a national focus to the program today, but that's timely because the Australian Senate is currently undertaking a national inquiry into Australia's youth justice and incarceration system. The committee received over 200 submissions, including one from our organisation, the Aboriginal Legal Service in WA, but from you guys as well, Social Reinvestment WA. I understand that you recently gave evidence in Perth. Can you tell us what the submission was about that was handed in through Social Reinvestment WA?
Yeah, and I was really lucky because I got to give evidence alongside representatives from the Aboriginal Legal Service as well. So SWA and ALS were able to do that side by side, which was really, I think, great and complimentary to both of our work. I think the submission and the work that we did based on the national inquiry was really about how can the national and federal governments improve some of the dismal conditions we've seen across the country in youth justice systems. So about how do we improve conditions in detention forever, you know, how do we make sure that children, kids as young as 10, aren't kept in squalid conditions in, you know, WA prisons or prisons around the country? How do we make sure their human rights are met? But also, overwhelmingly, we were looking at how do we stop kids from ending up in prison cells in the first place? And that goes long before we end up in prison cells, and it starts a lot earlier in the community. And that's what we were meeting with the Federal Senate inquiry about and what our report focused on.
I already mentioned speaking with the WA Children's Commissioner about the dire situation for our young people. As you mentioned, you know, the age of criminal responsibility is as young as 10 years old, and we have Banksia Hill Detention Centre in Western Australia in Boolloo, but also, you know, children being held in Unit 18 of a maximum security adult prison. We've heard horror stories come out of these places in recent years and before, but it's clear that the current system isn't working, isn't it? And that young people are not being kept safe as they should be.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think what's key is that when we have children being held in rolling lockdowns for months and months and months on end, which is what we saw in WA in 2022 and through 2024, you know, that's children as young as 10 being held in solitary confinement conditions, less out of their cells for less than 1 hour a day for months on end. And also, ultimately, the terrible and tragic deaths of not just one but two children in detention in WA, which can never and should never happen again. We know that something's seriously wrong. And what's key about that is what we can say is that there have been some improvements in the conditions in children's prisons in WA in the past year and a half, particularly with the establishment of the new Young People's Directorate. We're starting to see average hours out of cells, you know, 10 hours, 11 hours a day. But that's only reaching the bare minimum of what children deserve and I think of what Western Australians expect of the care and custody of kids in government institutions in our state. So I think one of the key focuses of this federal inquiry needs to be how do we get national minimum standards that ensure that, you know, the bare minimum human rights and basic standards that children, all children, deserve and should be given in a country like ours, in a country as wealthy as ours. How can a federal, you know, inquiry ensure that we meet these national minimum standards so that any improvements that have happened continue and are kept like that forever?
Sophie Stewart is my guest, CEO of Social Reinvestment WA, talking to me today from Naarm. Obviously, there's an urgent need for reform and putting forward practical recommendations for a better system. In delivering your evidence recently alongside the Aboriginal Legal Service to the National Inquiry into Australia's Youth Justice and Incarceration System. Can you tell us the process that that actually involves and what happens from here on in with all of the submissions that were received, which numbered over 200?
Sorry, Jodie, you're just breaking up a little bit, but what happens in the process?
Can you tell us what it's actually like to give evidence at these hearings and then what happens moving forward with all of those submissions received? Like, you know, people put a lot of time and effort into doing a submission about their concerns with our young people. What happens with that information down the track?
Yeah, so all of the submissions, almost all of them, unless they've been specifically redacted, are now published on the federal government's and the Senate inquiry's website. So you can access all of the submissions that have been made to the public right now. What happens when we go in and give evidence? There was at least one day full of testimony from experts from across Western Australia. And there were three different senators in the room. So we had Senator Dorinda Cox from the Labor Party. We had Senator David Shoebridge from the Greens. And we had Senator Leah Bly from the Liberal Party. They came to hear our testimony and to ask us very specific questions. So it's the committee's responsibility to have read those submissions and then to, based on their, you know, readings and understandings from those submissions, to ask experts that they bring in key questions to help inform their decision making. What they'll then do after they've been around the country and they've heard all the evidence based on those submissions is that they'll compile a full report and then they'll table that report. And one of the things, and they'll table that report in Parliament. One of the things that makes this process promising for everybody in terms of change is it's a bipartisan process. So the final report that gets published, you know, has support from across different party lines, which means that we hope then that given that, you know, that report will be bipartisan or tripartisan or across all sorts of different parties, that then the federal government will act upon the recommendations in that report. And that might mean new legislation, it might mean new funding, it might mean policy changes at that national level that can support the work that happens in each of our states to improve things for kids and young people.
If you had three key messages for the government, what would it be?
Three key messages or three words?
Well, but you can have the whole messages if you want.
Oh, look, I think it's time for alternatives to prison. We don't need WA kids in cells, and there are options out there that we can use. We need to get on with it.
Beautiful. Sophie Stewart, thank you for your time. And what's taken you over east?
I'm over here right now for the Australian Progress Conference. I'm here with my colleagues, Ronald Binswani and Sienna Amarant, and we're here with a bunch of a whole lot of different social movements across the space, all working for really important justice causes. So it's really been a really special 2 days.
Good stuff. Thank you for taking time out of your day to chat with us on Law Matters, and all the best, and we'll look forward to chatting again soon.
Thank you so much, Jodie, for having me.
Bye. Sophie Stewart, CEO of Social Reinvestment WA, as we spoke about, the Australian Senate is currently undertaking a national inquiry into Australia's youth justice and incarceration system. The public hearings took place in Perth recently. Social Reinvestment, alongside Aboriginal Legal Service of Western Australia, gave their evidence. All of those submissions that were given can be accessed on the federal website. This is a local fellow's name is Mark Atkins. It's a song called Standing Strong.
But a dream we dream together, that's reality. And how far a little candle throws its light. A shining deed in a naughty world. Be the change you want to see in the world. not us, who? If not now, when? Today, my friends.
Hi, this is Anthony from the Gospel Celebration Show on Sundays from 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. If you like an eclectic mix of Christian contemporary music, hymns and gospel music, then the Gospel Celebration Show is for you. We'll even share a word with Good News with Pastor Keith. So tune in Sunday mornings from 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. right here on 100.9 FM and digital Noongar Radio Perth.
This is the Law Matters program brought to you by the Aboriginal Legal Service of Western Australia. Been on air since 2010, can you believe it? Big story for you now. On the 16th of March last year, several First Nations families, including kids, parents, carers and an elder, were ordered to leave a public pool after staff called the police alleging that some of the children were not complying with the rules. This happened at the Inverell Aquatic Centre in northern New South Wales. It's not too far from the Queensland border. There's about 12,000 people who reside in that town. Almost 1,500 of those are First Nations peoples. It lies on the lands of the Kamilaroi Nation. This is incredible that this would happen, because it just, when I heard about this, it just took me back to the freedom rides. If you've grown up of an older age, you will remember these. If you are younger but you know your history of what's happened in this country, I'm sure you will remember the freedom rides, where in 1965 a group of students from the University of Sydney drew national and international attention to the appalling living conditions of Aboriginal people and the racism that was rife in New South Wales country towns. It was known as the freedom ride. It was a 15-day bus journey through regional New South Wales that would become a defining moment in Australian activism. Now, their mission was to shine a light on the marginalisation of Aboriginal people. And also, those times included the barring of Aboriginal kids from the Moree and Kempsey swimming pools. Why am I bringing this up? Because when I heard about this latest story, it just reminded me of the kids at the Moree and Kempsey pools in New South Wales being banned. Moree is only 140-odd kilometres from Inverell, the town we're about to learn about now. And to tell us more is Lucy Schroeder, a solicitor with the National Justice Project. Lucy, thank you for your time. How are you?
Thank you for having me. I'm well, thank you.
I've got to tell you, I heard this story and I was scratching my head and I'm saying, it's 2026, am I really hearing this? But I want to talk about what's happened to these First Nations peoples in the town of Inverell in New South Wales. But before that, what is the National Justice Project?
So the National Justice Project is a not-for-profit law firm that is fearlessly fighting injustice. It's been in operation now for 10 years and we use the law to create systemic change. So we're based in Sydney, but we operate nationally, including in Western Australia.
Tell us what happened on the 16th of March last year in this town called Inverell.
Exactly. On that day, a year ago, our clients were enjoying a Sunday afternoon at the local pool in Inverell. They'd had no indication from the staff at any point that they might be removed for breaking any of the rules. And then the police arrived and they told our clients to leave and warned them that if they didn't leave, they could be arrested for trespass. Not just one person or one family, but many families, and all of them were Aboriginal.
How many people were asked to leave approximately?
The exact number, we're acting for 13 people, so several families, but there may have been others at the pool who were also affected who we're not acting for.
Is it fair to say that most of the people from the pool on that Sunday afternoon who were asked to leave were Aboriginal?
Yeah, that were asked to leave, yes. Our understanding is that they were Aboriginal. All of our clients are Aboriginal, and we do think it's a shocking echoes back to the freedom rides.
It beggars belief, actually. And, regional towns, the pool is such a hub for community members to gather at, get together, socialise. I'm a bit staggered that the pool staff didn't actually say anything to the people there. The first anyone knew was that something had gone awry was when the New South Wales police arrived.
Exactly. why didn't they just speak to us first? Why did we jump straight to the involvement of police?
So you're representing families who have lodged a complaint with the Australian Human Rights Commission stating that the actions of the pool staff and the police breached the Racial Discrimination Act of 1975. For the benefit of our listeners, what is the Racial Discrimination Act?
Yeah, the Racial Discrimination Act is a federal piece of law that prevents discrimination on the basis of race. So if you are in breach of that act, it amounts to unlawful discrimination, and we can bring a complaint in the Australian Human Rights Commission and potentially later in the federal court.
I want to know, with the 13 people, the 13 First Nations peoples that you are representing, what the family have conveyed to you in terms of how it felt when they were marched out of the Inverell Aquatic Centre on the 16th of March last year. I'm imagining that you're saying there was an elder there, there was children there, there was parents, there was carers. I imagine there's a range of emotions that those people felt at that time.
Exactly. The impact on our clients has been very profound. They've described that experience as humiliating. They don't feel welcome at the pool. They don't feel like they can go back, and most haven't been back. They've been travelling to different towns to swim or avoiding it entirely. And I think that's heightened by the fact that it is a small town, and you know that happened within their community.
A fella by the name of Thomas Davis spoke out after his family was deeply affected by the incident. He said he arrived at the pool to find three burly police officers humiliating a group made up of two elderly Aboriginal women and a group of small children by lining them up and walking them out the front door of the pool. He said that this was in full view of everyone else who was there. The group was being at all times respectful and complying with the police, even though, as they told me later, they'd done nothing wrong. It saddens me that things like this are still happening to our babies, not just in this community, but all over Australia. See it too much these days and nothing gets done about it. I personally went through it myself as a child. So did my mum, grandmother and other generations, and they've all worked so hard to try and pave the way for future generations to not have to experience. And we still sadly see it. It's not just, it's triggering, isn't it, for those who have grown up over the decades and who have seen their families or themselves been impacted by treatment like this. It's very sad, isn't it?
It is, it really is. And I think part of the reason is that this is so shocking to so many of us is that we want to believe that that type of discrimination isn't happening anymore, that it is a thing of the past, that the reality is that our clients and many other First Nations people are still experiencing discrimination like this.
My guest is Lucy Schroeder, solicitor with the National Justice Project. Lucy is representing 13 members of the town of Inverell, Northern New South Wales, who were subjected to being thrown out of the Inverell Aquatic Centre by New South Wales Police on the 16th of March last year. This area is just a few towns away from the Moree Baths and Swimming Centre, which was the focus of protests against segregation during the Freedom Rides in Australia, led by the late and great Charles Perkins in 1965. 60 years after that, you would expect as a nation we would be doing better, wouldn't you, Lucy?
Exactly, exactly. And that's certainly what we're calling for from the pool operator, Belgravia Leisure, and the New South Wales Police, is to walk the walk, to come to the table, make this right not only with the families that they've harmed, but to make sure that this doesn't happen anymore to any other Aboriginal people.
Another family member who was affected by the incident didn't want their name said, but they did say that what happened that day has had a lasting impact on our entire family. What should have been a normal day at the pool left our children frightened and confused, left the adults feeling humiliated and unheard. The experience has affected all of us, and it's something our family will carry for a long time. We're speaking out because no family should ever have to go through something like this, and we want to see real accountability and meaningful change so it never happens again. It is of great concern. I mean, regional towns, no matter where they are in the country, the local swimming pool is such an important gathering place, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely, definitely. Having grown up in the country myself, I, you know, have great memories of going to the pool when I was young, and I think many of us do. And it's heartbreaking that that experience has been so ruined for our clients, and, you know, that they have a very, very different experience of that than most of us.
Would it be fair to say that many of those affected on the day just probably are very hesitant to even think about going to that pool?
Exactly, exactly. As I mentioned, many of them haven't been back since. And I think many of them are, to be frank, dubious about, you know, what outcome might come of this that could get them back to the pool and make them feel like they're genuinely welcome there. So that's really what we're hoping to work towards.
All right. So the families that you're representing, 13 people, the National Justice Project is, the families have lodged a complaint with the Australian Human Rights Commission stating that the actions of pool staff and New South Wales police breached the Racial Discrimination Act of 1975. So their kids are now too scared to go back to the pool, don't feel safe or welcome in Inverell. Instead, they now travel 40 to 50 kilometres to go to another public swimming pool, which is absolutely outrageous. What happens in the process of lodging that complaint now, please, Lucy?
Yeah, so we've lodged the complaint. That engages a process of conciliation. So the Human Rights Commission will engage with the potential respondents, that's the New South Wales Police and Belgravia Leisure. They'll seek a response from them, and then we'll move towards a conciliation, which is a negotiation between our clients and the respondents, assisted by the Human Rights Commission, to try and reach a resolution. So we're really hopeful that we will be able to reach a resolution, but there remains the option after that, if we can't reach a resolution, that we terminate the complaint and then we can file in the federal court.
Is it a lengthy process?
It could be, it could be. The timeframes vary. It's faster than going than a usual court claim.
Mm-hmm.
But it depends on the capacity of the commission and how long it will take them to allocate the complaint.
All right. Well, look, can we touch base with you again down the track and see how it's all unfolding?
Definitely, definitely.
All right. Well, look, our thoughts are with all of the affected people in Inverell in northern New South Wales. Just to reiterate, First Nations families have spoken out about the harm caused after their children were thrown out from the Inverell Aquatic Centre by New South Wales Police. It happened on the 16th of March last year, included children, parents, carers, elders, ordered to leave the public pool after staff called the police alleging that some children were not complying with the rules. The families were not asked to leave by staff at any point before the police were called, and when they arrived they warned the families that they could be arrested for trespass on Kamilaroi country. If they didn't leave, they were then escorted from the pool. It's still difficult to believe that this happens in 2026, Lucy, but I wish you and the family all the very best, and we look forward to finding out more about it down the track. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for having me.
That is Lucy Schroeder, solicitor with the National Justice Project, who have, lodged the complaint with the Australian Human Rights Commission on behalf of the affected family. This is the Law Matters program. Oh, we only got a few minutes to go of this program. It's been a big one this hour. Thank you to my guests, Lucy, who we just heard from, also Dr. Jacqueline McCowan-Jones, WA Commissioner for Children and Young People, and Sophie Stewart, CEO of Social Reinvestment Western Australia. We're going to have a song now. This is from the Wedgetail Eagle Band, and it's called Mexican Hat. I'm